You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
We continue on a Thursday. We've been talking a little bit of transition lessons learned, best lessons, and also a little bit about if you have somebody in a crisis, what advice would you give them? So we've been talking about that.
Kenley will score. Judge to third. 3-0 New York.
Boom! Okay, so I'm minding my own business, driving my daughter to LAX because she's going. She left for Europe yesterday afternoon, and all of a sudden, Chatty Cathy starts breaking squelch on the text message, starting to make comments on the game. So joining us is Chatty Cathy. So Kathy, did you feel chatty yesterday? Why did you feel like you had to share with the group?
Who's Chatty Cathy?
You.
No. You is a female sheep, man, and I ain't one of
those. Oh, here we go. Why is it always got to be like this with you? I'll read you the series of texts that all of a sudden start coming down the pipe, and I'm thinking, you know what? He's sitting there watching the ball game, and he's bored, and he looked at his phone and said, you know what? Let me see what I can scare up with these idiots on the text message machine. And then he starts using different pronouns, which started to irritate me. All right? Right? So, again, so the game starts, right? And this is the first one. All right? Damn, Houston needs to start hitting if they want a chance at the series. Me, shut it. All right? Undaunted. This is not the Astros from the regular season. Yankees are finding their pitches. What the hell? Who put a quarter in you? Shut it. Quarter? I only take Sacagaweas. Don't get ethnic.
Sacagaweas. Sacagaweas. They're the dollars.
Right. Don't get ethnic. Those are my people. All right. Then Dallas is not pitching so well. Like Mike's boys with Dalek Keuchel, all right? And then he says Dodgers and Yankees. All right, so all of a sudden, first of all, Houston, man, they stopped hitting. I mean, they haven't hit the whole series, to be honest with you. They got four hits last night, shutout.
One of the commentaries was, and it was, I mean, it's true, that they said that if you look at the stats right now for this series, Houston's hitting is a bingo number, 007. I mean, it's just ridiculous. This is how they won this is how they destroyed their opponents. They're hitting and pitching team.
Right.
All of a sudden, boom, the wall. They hit the wall, dude. They're done.
Big city, a lot of pressure. No can do, man. The thing about the playoffs is, I mean, the pitching. I saw Aaron Judge get interviewed, and they said, you know, you seem to be back in a groove, and, you know, you and Sanchez. And he said, we never weren't in a groove. He said, this is hard, though. He said, those guys, when they make their pitches, you're not going to hit them. He said, I've talked to enough guys, big-time guys here, that when they're on and they're making their pitches, they didn't get to where they are because they're not going to get you out when they're making their pitches. He said, so, you know, you have to be patient and, you know, you wind up hitting mistakes. He said, but it's not like we're not on. He said, this is hard. This is hard.
Yeah.
And so you do feel for, you feel, I mean, look, I remember Tommy Lasorda asking about, like, the hardest thing in sports. And they asked him, like, so, Tommy, you know, Tiger Woods said the hardest thing in sports is to hit a golf ball. It goes, to hit a golf ball, like they have signs holding up that says everybody to be quiet. So it's completely quiet, and he's got to hit a golf ball. He says, and then there's my guys, the Dodgers, in the middle of Yankee Stadium, and the place going hysterical. You know, you don't know if the guy's going to throw a 100-mile-an-hour fastball or a 91-mile, cutter or slider. You know, he said, and in the middle of that, you're supposed to hit that? Come on, give me a break. But, you know, there is a certain amount of truth to that. There's nobody that can come up and help you. It's just you and that bat. And it's a pretty cool drama to watch. So I've been loving watching the whole thing. But Houston, yeah, stopped hitting. And the pitching's been pretty good, though.
I'm falling asleep, man. We need to change subjects.
whoa, no, you were all about it. Okay, I got a couple of, email questions that earlier, and I talked about it, and I'd just be curious about you. One was, hey Mac, you've been doing this for almost a year and a half now. If you were to give people transition advice, what advice would you, what have you learned? And here's my advice, Mike, and then there's a second email, and I quoted you in the second email, but the advice, is money plan. Two is outsource your resume. Three is veterati. Begin to develop a network of veterans in the area that you're going to go to, in the field that you want to work in, and begin to cultivate those people, ask them questions, let them help you. At some point, one of those people is going to tell you about a job. All right. And then four comes from Colby Williamson, who was a fire team leader in Fallujah. He's now doing HR at Amazon, hiring veterans. But he said, look, look at either the move after college, or if you're an officer or a staff NCO with a degree and you don't have to go to college, look at the first 4 years after you get out as one more PCS move, where you're going to get one, maybe two jobs in places that are hiring, and then armed with those bullets on your resume, you're going to take those bullets and get the job you really want in the place you really want to live. And I thought that was great advice. So do you either comment on that, or any advice you'd give relative to transitioning now that you've done it?
Yeah, well, just be leery of anything that MCCS is going to hand out and give you. Like you said, outsource your resume. The last thing you want to do is listen to advice a bunch of retired first sergeants or staff sergeants that are now running these, you know, transition courses. You know, and like you said, I was in it, and it finally clicked on me. And I was, and nothing bad about it. I mean, I liked the guy. But I asked him, I said, when you retired as a first sergeant, how many jobs have you had? And he said, well, I was hired right into this. And I said, okay, wait a second. You're telling me that you're sitting in here and you're the sole guy that's giving advice to these young enlisted guys who's transitioning to get a job and how to do this and this whole thing. And you basically, because you were a first sergeant in this unit that ran this and civilian, you just transitioned. I mean, all you did was doing it as a first sergeant. And then one day you came into a suit. That doesn't count. You've never walked these shoes that you're asking these guys to do. You're reading it from a book. This is fake. And it was a lot of that, you know.
Mike, I agree with you. Take it for what it's worth. I mean, again, my grandmother used to say the road.
What it's worth is you have to do it to get out. It's part of your checkout. That's all you got to do.
Right.
And then dump it and go find something that's got more substantial information in it.
Right, right. For, you know, again, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. You have guys with all the best intentions. They got their syllabus. They got the things that they've got to talk to you about, some of them by law relative to your benefits and all that kind of stuff. Okay,
right.
But that's not – get beyond that. Take that information, right, put it in your bookcase. A lot of it's good reference stuff. And then get about the business of doing the other things that we've talked about. But networking with guys that you know that have already gone through this, is where it starts. And the biggest thing, especially if you're married, is the financial plan. Is so your wife, you know, I mean, again, you begin saving money in preparation for this. You know, you can collect unemployment for X amount of time. And then, you know, so, which means you don't have to drain your savings, your kids got to go to school, all those kind of things. But if you have that plan together and say, hey, we're going to go to Minneapolis 3M is there. Target is there. Best Buy's corporate headquarters there. And I'm going to go to work in HR, and I'm going to get a major, you know, Fortune 500 company on my list, and maybe two of them. And then from Minneapolis, we're going to, you know, we're going to try to move home or wherever the hell we wanted to move to. To me, when you begin to see that, and I thought, you know, that path was really smart, as opposed to, well, I'm going to go, I want to live in Granbury, and I want to be in this. Well, you might only be talking about one or three jobs in the area, depending on, and you're not competitive for it. But go get competitive and then move to Granbury, and you'll get that job. You'll get that job. And that's, I mean, so things that you learn. Mike, I'd be curious about one of the things.
You gotta be careful with that too, because that's not always possible. We know that. I mean,
in terms
once you make that first move, when you get out,
right,
you may be there for a substantial amount of time. So it's not as easy as we make it sound like, you know, go get a job, get this job, and then retire, you know, then get a job where you want to go.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. But I thought it was pretty sage advice, because a lot of guys go where they want to go, and then they wind up finding out that, yeah, those jobs aren't here. Right? And so you're going to have to, if you want to do that, you're going to have to go do that. And chances are, that's not going to lead you to that. But
well, the advice is really, hey, you got to make a compromise. Yeah, you really, really, really want to work in the city, but guess what? You know, that ain't going to happen. So the best you're going to do is this city. And by some kind of crazy chance, way down the future, this might open up.
Right.
But that's not, I wouldn't put that as a plan. That would be a bargaining chip. That would be something, you know, hey, here's where the compromise lies.
Right. Well, I would like almost like a branch plan, right? These
right.
conditions have to exist for this to become activated.
Right.
You know, but
then you're just wishing.
Right.
That's wishing.
Right. Right. And that's
no,
what,
that's not a real goal.
Right. And so I thought it was interesting when he was talking about it. He said, I knew, and Mike's from the Twin Cities. The Twin Cities is a big time jobs place. You know, it's Midwest, so quality of life is high. And I think for military people, you're used to moving around the country. I thought it was pretty good advice. Now you might wind up living in Eden Prairie for the rest of your life. And let me tell you, it wouldn't be the worst thing that ever happened to you or your family, because it's a pretty cool place.
Yeah, it would. You're in Minnesota.
but it's pretty high quality of life in Minnesota. You know, the people are great. The politics are a little weird. But how about this, Mike? Second part of it was, Mac, what advice, if people tell you that, you know, hey, so-and-so's wife just called my wife. He's struggling, right? He's calling in sick from work. He doesn't PT. He's put on a bunch of weight. He goes shooting a lot. Yada yada yada. What advice do you give people like that? And so the advice that I tend to give is tell them to walk into a vet center. You know, Vietnam guys, era guys. They created that. The records are kept there locally. They're not shared with big VA. It's the first step in opening the door to getting mental health treatment and maybe
better. Is it a veterans VA center? What?
Yeah, it's the VA vet center, right? Now, and then my caveat, though, was this, Mike. I said, you know, Mike Musselman had a, you know, his experience wasn't very good, and he wound up plugging in at the county veteran service officer. So what I'd learned in over the course of the last 18 months is VA, big organization, it's not good everywhere. If you don't find what you need, don't quit. You know, just bounce out of there and go walk into the county VSO office and introduce yourself to them. And if you're not, or before you do any of that, you know, walk into the Marine Corps League detachment and meet some Marines and say, hey, man, you, anybody know somebody really good that I could talk to is at a vet center or the county? And those dudes will tell you, yeah, so-and-so's an asshole. Don't go there. Go there. This guy's awesome. And so now the Marine Corps League around the nation, those detachments, money, because they lived in the community and they know that. But your thoughts on that, Mike, in terms of when people ask you, you know, where do they plug in? Or
it's like everything. So one of the great organization we have here in Granbury is we have it's a Marine Corps NROTC program at the high school.
Right.
And run by a former artillery officer. Actually, no, we served time together. We know the same people. And, you know, and but this is a nationally ranked, I mean, they're, for this little high school in this state, they're national in the NROTC program. They're in the top five. And, you know, they have an indoor shooting range in the high school. They have like a cash sales for all the uniforms that would rival that of SOI West. I mean, it's just the high school superintendent, when they were building the new portion of the high school, came to them and said, hey, pick out your spaces. Tell me exactly what you need space-wise, classroom-wise, everything. And then, like I said, they got an indoor. It's laser, but it's still training because they shoot, you know, the air, high-powered air rifles and stuff. But a phenomenal program. They're interconnected with everything in the city because everybody's kids, they want their kids to be in this program because a lot of the success stories of these kids graduating go on, you know, they have this in their pocket. So it's,
that's awesome.
Be careful,
that's awesome.
Because, yeah, but see now, here you go. You got VFW, you got American, or, you got Veterans of Foreign Wars, and you have the Legion, American Legion.
Right.
Then you have your associations, like Marine Corps League, the Navy League, whatever, the Army League.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you have the Officers Association. You know, you have all these things. And then you have these, you know, it's just, there's a lot of an association. Find which one works for you and stick with them. My problem was, you know, when I went to each one, the one I walked in there, and I've been in fires that have had less smoke than, you know, these buildings with people smoking in them. And I'm not a smoker. And I hate walking into a building and walking out, and I got to now destroy my clothes because I can't wash these things. The smell's not coming out. And then, or you're in company of everybody, and all they do is bitch about their time in the service. Or you find these guys, and you're like, and you know, great, great guys, but you find these guys, and you're talking about, you know, how the life, this life, this, that life stuff, and you find out that they were in the Marine Corps 2 years, you know, and they're a PSC. Now they're the authoritative expert on how the Marine Corps works. And you're like, oh. So you try and pick your battles. You know,
right.
That first one, like I said, one guy called me out. He was like, there ain't no gunners in the Marine Corps. What are you talking about? Bursting bomb. And I'm like, okay. No, sure. There, you know, and he's like, okay, there is. You left the Marine Corps in what, 1956? I mean, it's changed a little bit. Maybe, you know. So we got into it, and he didn't believe me, even though, you know, I was like, whatever. I don't have to convince you. You know, well, let me see your DD-214. Well, screw you, you know, old man. You know, you're now just, who are you? And so there was that kind of positive, negative experience. There was some really great, I mean, there's some really great guys that do great things, and then there's a bunch of other people that are just mad at the world and use this as their platform. So just be careful where you pick and look around and talk to people. And before you jump in, go visit them, go have a beer with them or go sit down with them. And they usually have some kind of event going on, and see if you're going to mesh, you know?
No, but I'll tell you what, Mike and I are talking about two kind of separate things. He's talking about veteran organizations. I'm talking about when you go to get help, psychological help or things like that, the vet centers. And you can use those veteran organizations as references to get pointed, and I agree with them. You know, some of them you walk in and you're like, it's like the bar in the Star Wars movie. Like, it's like, I don't belong here. I don't fit in. And, you know, most of the time it's me. It's not them. I mean, I it's just not for me. And, to me, the easiest place to get mental health services are veteran, they're called vet centers, and they're all across the country. And,
yeah, I've never heard of them.
Yeah.
So that's why.
Yeah, you should check it out. I'd just be curious about what you'd find in Granbury, the vet center.
My experience has always been,
I know,
go to your civilian doctor, because the VA doc, the VA is horrible. Horrible.
And see, I didn't have that experience. I did not. I had I had a good, like, when I walked in to talk to somebody, the guys I met were awesome guys. And yeah, it's called the Granbury CBOC, Granbury Community-Based Outpatient Clinic, serves veterans living in, I don't know if that's it. Maybe it's,
yeah, that's part of the VA system, though.
Right. Yeah, and that's what it is. There's the vet center in Fort Worth, Texas.
Yeah. So that's where I told you the story that, you know, for PTSD, they wanted to, you know, you need to see a counselor. Okay, sure. Okay, we're going to set you up, do this. You get there, you walk into this room, and you're like, where is everybody? Where's, am I in the right place? And all that there is there's like a computer sitting at this desk. And then if someone comes in and goes, okay, sir, you just put your login information in here. Like, what login information? Well, they didn't give you one? No. So you play that game.
Right.
And then finally you get in, and then you're like, okay, so your session will start, you know, once you hit this key or something. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? Oh, all these sessions are videoed. So the person you're talking to is, you know, somewhere else.
Outreach.
So all I did was I grabbed my stuff and I got up and I walked up the door and I got my car and I left. Because okay. if it's not that important, you can't put another human being in front of another human being.
Right.
We're going to video, you know, okay, go ahead and tell me, Skype this. You know, make a video game that when you it do the same thing.
I'm with you, Mike, but they can't be everywhere. You know, and so, you know.
They can be everywhere, Mac.
Financially, you can't.
What do you mean they can't be everywhere? Yeah, you can. I do it now.
What do you mean?
I just got to step outside the VA.
Oh, okay. That's fine.
They're everywhere now when you're in the civilian medical.
That's fine.
VA, there's two.
Right.
You know,
right,
and
they are
before
limited.
You get an appointment.
But they are limited by a budget. In terms of, you know, they're not going to be in Mojave, California, live with a person, and I mean that type of therapy.
No, but then outsource with the local area.
I'm with you.
They're available. Right. That's my point.
I don't know. I've never done.
They're like lawyers and lawyers, man. Again, they're everywhere.
I've never done, I don't know anybody who's ever done that video thing, and I'd be curious to know somebody who does that thinks it's helped them. Because I think a lot of guys that I've spoken to don't like to do that, you know, and so that, yeah, I don't like to do it. It's not the same as you sitting here, I can see you, I can see your body, I can see, you know, when you're talking about something and your body betrays anxiety. I don't
Also trust, too.
Right.
Who else is in that room with you? Are you recording this? I mean, what are we doing here? Who else is watching this? Who else is listening to this?
I didn't realize are you paranoid a little bit?
No. But I like face-to-face because, like you said, then you can see expressions. It's a trust thing.
All right, I've got to. I want to ask you about a couple of things that you told me about.
Well, hey, real quick. So when I FaceTime you one day, and I'm like, and you see my video on the phone, and I say, Mac, trust me, I have your back on this. Go ahead and punch that guy in the head, man. I'm right here with you, buddy. Tell me how that works out for you. That's the trust.
I would punch him in the head. You told me you had my back, and you wouldn't screw me over, so I'd punch him in the head, and it worked out.
Wouldn't screw you over.
Yeah, and so I don't know. You would certainly have some way of doing it, or else you wouldn't have told me to do it. So, Tell me about this. You recommended that I watch PBS Frontline. PBS Frontline Mosul.
Yeah.
Tell me about it.
Okay. So it's Frontline. Frontline does this whole, it's just a series of programs. And actually, I'm getting into these Frontline things. So it's a documentary filmed 2017. It's brand new. Filmed over 9 months. Combat footage focuses on an Iraqi Special Forces unit fighting against the Islamic State group in Mosul. So this is the battle that took place in the latter part of the year. And it's literally the whole, you know, this guy is following a 10-man squad in through the streets of Mosul and fighting. It's kind of crazy because it does bring back some bad memory. I mean, it's like you listen to these guys and you fight, see the fighting, and it's just like, oh, reminiscent of those days. But I'll tell you, though, you know, like I said, these guys are shit hot, man. I'm glad to see that, you know, these guys are brave. Their courage is never in question. I mean, they want to go after these guys. And then just, I'm at right now where an ISIS sniper shot somebody in their squad and they're pissed. And
this is an Iraqi, Special Forces.
Special Forces.
Are they? Do you know if they're Ministry of Defense guys or what? Do you know?
No, I don't. I don't know. I don't. Got I can't it. Tell. But all they right. These guys are good. I mean, they're really good.
So you would okay? So PBS Frontline, and so search on PBS Frontline Mosul, and then you said there was another one about Yemen.
Yemen.
And then
Yemen's tough to watch too, though. That's like the true life.
I found two of them about Yemen. One is called Inside Yemen, which is a front line, and then the other one is called Yemen Under Siege.
Both. Yeah.
Both? Got it.
Oh, yeah.
Got it. No, I will tell you this.
Did you see the Mosul one?
I found it. Yeah. I mean, I obviously haven't watched it. You just told me about it, but no, PBS Frontline, I mean, they have a great reputation for, I hate to use the word unbiased reporting because all reporting has a bias, but doing quality reporting from places that we won't normally see. And I just made the comment the other day. I mean, think about this. Raqqa has been essentially liberated from the Islamic State. We haven't seen anything out of that fight. You know,
right.
Literally, I mean, it's like, you know, I remember it was in 2004 when the fighting in Najaf started down south, and all the media that was around Fallujah went down to Najaf, and then our 1st Marine Regiment, RCT-1, started laying the wood to Fallujah doing these feints, and there was nobody there to cover it. And I mean...
Right.
That's when we had AC-130s going Winchester on a nightly basis over Fallujah. You know, they'd shoot that 25-millimeter gun, and holy smokes, so the noise that you would hear. So, but nobody was there to cover it. It was like, if you destroy a city and nobody reports on it, do you really destroy the city? Because nobody knows about it. And so it's almost like that's been what we've heard from Raqqa. You know, you don't hear anything. We know there's Marines from 10th Marine Regiment and there's security forces around them that are providing supporting fires. We know there's Special Forces soldiers that are now embedded in formations of the Syrian elements that are are pro-American, if you will, or at least who we've thrown in with, and they routed. You know, the Islamic State, something that we thought would take a long time, hasn't taken that long of a time. And yet we haven't seen anything about it. And these PBS, you know, frontline programs, they go there and they do this stuff. And I'm so thank you very much for turning me on to this stuff. I love watching. I don't watch a whole lot of TV. You know, I watch this kind of stuff. I watch sports, and that tends to be what I watch. I don't watch a whole lot of movies either. I couldn't even tell you the last movie that I watched. I'm trying to think. You go to see movies. I haven't seen a movie in a long time. I wanted to go see the movie you told me to go see.
Which was that?
I can't remember. You told me I'd like it.
Wonder Woman? Wonder Woman is pretty good.
I don't know that it was Wonder Woman.
Strange to me on that island with those Amazonian princesses.
Hold on, here's an email. Mac, I know that you didn't care to speak of it this morning. I'd just be curious to hear Mike's thoughts on this whole controversy surrounding the wife of this soldier killed in Africa and the conversation with the president. So, Mike, I'll just tell you what I said. I said, look, this goes someplace that I would never care to go. I don't know what the president said. I don't know what she said. Third people articulating what both of them said make me nervous. But it's too sacred of a place for us to even fight about it. The president should shut up about it. Whoever from her family is talking about it, they should shut up about it. And grown-ups should resolve whatever misunderstanding there has been. Because this is unworthy of his sacrifice, and I don't really care to comment on it. But your thoughts on this? I mean, it's in the front news of all over the place.
My thoughts are, you know what? No one did it best like George W. Bush. You know, now there'll be no president like him that really, really understood the sacrifice. There's a story that goes worse, and he'd show up at the hospitals unannounced because he didn't want the media. He didn't want the problems with it. So he was at, I think, Walter Reed or Bethesda and, showed up and the CNO is there and one of this guy in there briefing the president before he meets this guy. And one of the rooms he walks into is a Marine who has been in a coma since Landstuhl, Germany. And so he asked the prognosis. He says the Marine is, it doesn't look good. You know, if he wakes up, he's got a better chance, but he's been in a coma since. So his family's there, and he was kind of, he didn't know how this was going to go, but the family was really receptive to have him there. And then, he turns to the military aide and he says, go ahead and read the citation because George Bush is going to pin the Purple Heart onto this Marine's pillow. And as he's reading the citation and he pins it, little boy, his son, the Marine's son, comes up to the president and says, what is the Purple Heart? So then George Bush tells him, it's a medal that would give your daddy to let him know that this country, he's an American hero, and he's, just this beautiful little thing. And during that, the doctors start rushing around, and George Bush realizes this Marine had just opened his eyes. So one of those amazing things, opens his eyes.
Wow.
And George Bush goes to the Marine and cups his face, and they almost put their foreheads before each other because he wants to hear it, And so he says to him, I want to hear it again. So he tells the military aide, read it again. Read the citation. So he reads the citation. Then this whole time you could hear a pin drop after this talking in the room, and as what's covered is the fact that no words are really exchanged. George Bush, basically holding this kid, almost touching foreheads. And George Bush's tears are falling off of his face and landing on this Marine's face. That image of the commander-in-chief down to the soldier, the person that went out and put their life on the line, is such an... That's the thing that I think, again, this president missed out, the last president missed out, the canned speeches, the canned telephone calls were so sorry for your loss and, but George Bush, he really did it and he still does it today. It haunts him. And, that's why he has a house outside in Dallas that he doesn't live in Crawford all the time on his ranch in Crawford. He lives in Dallas so he can visit the VA. And for him, it's a soothing thing. He's done paintings, you know, so he's lived with it. That's a true commander in chief that understands the sacrifice. This one will never get it, and I don't expect him to get it. So what I expect him to do is get some speechwriter to do something that shows, that conveys something nice. Shit, go to Hallmark, for Christ's sakes. But don't be an idiot and do what you did on TV and then start bashing on Twitter. Because then, like you said, then the adults are gone. Then it's just children. And when you start seeing, I just don't like seeing our government act this way over the loss of, you know, a soldier. It's disgusting to me.
Yeah, and he didn't have to go. Yeah, he didn't have to go very far to get the best advice he'll ever get either. He just had to walk next door.
Chris, Kelly's right in the room with him, and he's right. Making the phone call. I mean, John Kelly is, if not one of his best advisors when it comes to experiencing loss of a soldier or a marine or a sailor or an airman. I mean, if you want to read something that has truly meaning and impact, read Kelly's speech on the death of his son. You know, and it's that speech is something else.
One of the things,
for a man like that to get.
I hope the president reads it, but one of the things that I've never forgot about that speech is he said, you know, I've written letters to families that lost Marines, being a commanding general and whatnot. And he said, and in that pain, in those letters I wrote that I was a father of three and I understood their pain. And he said, and I want to take a minute right now to apologize for having written that.
That he never truly understood it until he experienced it.
Right. He said, I had no idea the depth of your pain. And I want to apologize for ever writing that. And then he mentioned General Kelly in one of his remarks. Man, you need to shut up with that stuff, okay? He mentioned his son, and that's not something that you play with. That's not something that
you
go there.
And he's gonna, you know what?
And hold on, Mike, let me finish.
He almost lost.
Especially now, okay? Because if you track Facebook in the circles that Mike and I run in, this is the time of year that families of what is known as the 3-5-25 struggle. This is the time of year families, including the Kelly family, they lost their son on November 9th, but it was during this period of time, 7 years ago, that 3-5 was fighting in the Sangin province, or the Sangin area of the Helmand province of Afghanistan, and they suffered a lot of casualties. Every year at this time, they go through the opening and the grieving process. It's not ever going to go away. That day is always going to be, you know, special. And I remember seeing something that one of them posted last year, and it said, I miss you so much. This day will always be different because our lives were impacted forever, you know, upon the news of your death. It was a picture of their son, and it was just the words of a mother saying, I miss you. I miss your smile. I miss you darkening my door. I miss your arms around me. All the personal stuff that, you know, this is not an issue that belongs in the national headlines. It's too personal. Yeah. It's too sacred. And I hope the president hits mute and makes this go away, because it's very upsetting, I think, to a lot of people. So.
Dude, I tell you, I was on the fence. I mean, I was truly on the fence. This is one of those areas, you know, you just don't cross the line with me, because the sacrifice, you don't, if you don't know what these guys go through, like we've said before on the show, Mac, what these guys go through and put themselves in risk, and then they pay the ultimate sacrifice. And it's not, there's nothing cool and sexy. There's no beautiful music playing when these guys die. You know, it's not a movie trailer. It's not anything else. It's cold. It's scary. It's dark. It's most times they're calling out to their loved one, you know, that they cherish the most. And when you play this politically out and you need to be an ass about it, you will turn me against you in a heartbeat.
And you can never come back. You can never come back from that either.
I will never forgive you for this. Yeah, you cross that line.
Don't go there.
You disrespect a fallen comrade. You will never get me back.
And again,
never. And that could be a family member.
And so to me, that's the picture. That's to me what the NFL has gotten near. Like, I know you guys, we don't mean to offend veterans, okay? If you saw the picture, that's been circulating, it's the remains of her husband, in a casket with the American flag over the casket, get brought back to Dover, and she and her daughter looks to be maybe 6 or 7, you know, comes up to her like bicep height, and the casket is brought off the aircraft, and then she goes over, and she essentially hugs it. She's laying on top of it, you know, her chest on top of it, and her head on top of it. And her daughter said, "It's not heartbreaking. It's heart crushing to watch it, you know."
Yeah.
And that's the world that people get to peek in every once in a while that we've lived in. Right? It's that world that's absolutely brutal. And as Mike said, there's nothing cool about it. And then, you know, there's a little girl who's never gonna be held by her father again. And it doesn't belong anywhere but in a very sacred and caring place. So that
private place. Yeah.
Right. And so
not on the news.
I know the NFL guys, they don't know that world. But before you disrespect the flag, right? You ought to learn about it. You ought to learn about it. And when you touch that place, because people think I'm joking when I say I don't watch the NFL anymore. What? It's off.
Yeah.
And so then yesterday what came out of the meeting with, I saw a comment by Michael Bennett, the dude who got yoked up in Las Vegas. And then the Las Vegas police, you know, they show the video and you're like, oh, you know, what do you say? Stupid, what, win stupid prizes?
Oh, play stupid games, win stupid prizes?
Yeah, that's Michael Bennett. And he's quoted, yeah, they met yesterday, but until there's some resolution with Colin Kaepernick, we won't talk again. Oh, really? So it's just, you know, it's just stupid. It's stupid people that somehow or other have a gift for playing a sport and they somehow get in the national spotlight. But when you've lived the reality that we've lived, and I posted a series of pictures on our website, and just pictures that I collected over the course of years that touched me. Some involved funerals of Marines that we tried to save and that worked for us. Some were just pictures that I saw that struck me that I just happened to save. But it's a little glimpse into Marine Land. And so I just put them up. I didn't write anything special with them, but I just wanted people to see, do you want it better than I can explain it here? And I think if you go to the podcast page and under that little search window, just type in NFL and the entry's entitled Why I Don't Watch the NFL. And it really takes you, the American flag is almost in every picture. There's one of the RCT1 emblem, with every sets of dog tags of everybody that we lost. So that's what a year's worth of Marines looks like in 2010. But the rest of them are all pictures of the flag as it sits over a coffin, as it comes, as it leaves, you know, where we were in Afghanistan, the ramp ceremony that happens as it arrives and it comes off an airplane. And then there's pictures that that you know, were to me so moving, like the pictures, the video today and the picture I saw of this woman today. A woman takes a mattress, a blow-up mattress, to a funeral home to spend the night with her husband, right, with a Marine standing there in the background, because we don't leave them once this happens, right, once they become our angels, once they become our heroes. Another picture of a woman who's pregnant, right, and standing, you know, next to an open casket. And then Marines following what looked to be Buddhist monks, because again, we're from every corner of the country, every demographic section is represented. And then, you know, pictures of Marines, you know, lowering caskets, pictures of flags being handed to wives, pictures of flags being handed to mothers, wives with children. And then there's one picture that always reminded me of my sons, because little kids and little guys in a blue blazer with a white shirt and a red tie on, which is the way I used to dress my little chuckleheads. And he's receiving, you know, the flag from his father's casket. And he's trying not to cry, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so all I wanted to show was, this is our world. You say you're not trying to offend us? You look at this picture. You come into our world, and then you explain to me how we shouldn't be offended. And then go about your day, because I don't want to talk to you anymore. Right? So it's just bothersome. I hoke the president gets yoked up by General Kelly and said, hey, you need to stop. This needs to end. You can't play Twitter. You can't do anything else. This is bad.
So. Yeah, he's going to lose a big base. I'm telling you, man. He's going to.
All right, email.
Dude, I don't know.
And we'll end on this. Hey, Mac, I heard you guys talking about Frontline. Could you go over the two episodes you're talking? Let me just tell you this. I turned the thing about Mosul on, and I've had it on since Mike came on. And I will tell you this. When these guys are moving, you would not know the difference between these guys, because all of us have seen the Iraqi army we're not talking about them, Mike. I mean, if you watch these guys, the way they move tactically, the way they do their stuff, I mean, until you see them with their helmets off, you would confuse them for American Brits. I mean, people moving with that kind of skill level. Very impressive. Very impressive. So.
Well, they just crossed the line, though. So now you'll see it coming up pretty soon if you're watching it, where they're getting ready to cross the road. And what do? They grab a civilian to go out and look for snipers. It's like, oh, you guys are doing so good. And then you use the tactic of, hey, come here, civilian, innocent bystander, get on the street to see if there's any snipers. And then he's got his pistol drawn at him. He's like, if we get shot at and we cross the room, I'm going to empty this thing in you.
Yeah.
There you go. There they are. The true Iraqi just came out of them.
They don't care, right? It's like, hey, look.
They don't give a shit. You know, it's like, well, that scene right there, I'm like, oh, you guys, you're telling me that you're fighting for the city of Mosul, you care about the people there, and all of a sudden you take one of them and you're like, get out there and go look for snipers. Oh, my God.
That's why, you know, try to explain that to people. Look, the way we care about collateral damage and things like that, this is a rough, rough part of the world. And you know what? I'll tell you what. That's why more Americans should watch this stuff. You need to see that. You need to see that.
This is how the real world is, man.
Yeah.
This is how they treat their own people.
Yeah. These are Iraqis.
Their own people.
And I'll tell you what. And the other thing that's interesting is I don't know. These are Sunnis, people I would suspect that are trying to get out of Mosul.
Yeah, I think.
Right. I'm not sure if the guys who are in this are, you know, did they say, Mike, if they're Sunnis or Shiites in this special forces unit?
I want to say they're probably Shiite.
Right. Because the people, when they go by them, they're not looking at them like they're buddies. They're looking at them with fear.
Oh, no.
With fear.
Yeah. When they come into this house, this woman is shaking so bad, you think that she's got some disease.
Right. Right. Anyway. Hey, thanks for that. Interesting.
Yeah, this is not, you're going to, it's really a, like I said, it's really a good story so far.
No, I'll tell you what, but I'll tell you what, it gives you some idea also of the level of devastation. One of the things that happens when we support this kind of war is that these guys will, they're doing their thing, right? But they'll go slower than we historically would, and we'll use more supporting arms than we probably historically would. Because of, they need that, right? They need us to, you know, they need to push people. We need to see them. We smoke them. They'll continue to move. And in the course of that, cities just get annihilated. I mean, so like this, the pictures we've all seen of Fallujah and Ramadi years later where we just look at them and go, holy shit, man. There's like, there's nothing left. I mean, that's, you see a lot of that in this stuff. So interesting. But again, it gives us a better view of it because we don't see a lot of reporting from it anymore. We just don't see it. So anyway, thank you very much.
All right, man. I'll talk to you.
There you have it. Michael Musselman, Yankee fan. Go Yankees, baby.
Shit, man. Don't say that.
He's an American League East guy, man. He's got to be a Yankee fan. This is the audio from that. They're doing room clearing. Yeah, you can watch it online. Fascinating. The other thing you'll get a chance to see is the way the Iraqis do power. They string their own lines. Power lines everywhere. Right? People splice into them. They splice off of them. It looks like spaghetti above, you know, in the city. Yeah, wiring. It's the craziest thing you've ever seen. Anyway, you can check it out. It's PBS Frontline, and then type in Mosul, and then there's two other episodes on Yemen. And you just get a sense of this is what we're dealing with. This is the part of the world that we're trying to make something out of. And it's not going to be a short commitment. Let me just, my boy Nielsen was listening. Talking about transition, good job. Add this. Start making a list of your strengths and weaknesses. Review it with spouse and good friends. Be honest with yourself. And this does not include good battalion commander or good sergeant major. That means nothing on the outside. Okay? And so, and then he chimes in about the president has no clue. You know, again, there's certain things you shouldn't really talk about, like in that vein, like it's just another issue. It isn't. And so, anyway, hopefully he'll shut his pie hole. That'll do it on a on a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio. Thanks for listening. The program will repeat itself momentarily. So if you missed it, we'll talk news of the day, as we always do. We'll talk transition. And I'll tell you what, I'll tell you myself, that's good information. So if you know people that are getting ready to transition, if you're getting ready to transition, or if you're going to retransition, listen to it. Because I've been doing this for about 18 months, and I've... You know, talk transition with a lot of different people, and I'll give you the four things that I would tell you are that I think are important about you transitioning. And none of them have anything to do with your transition class that you're going to go to at whatever level. So, but the advice is solid, solid as the day is long. So there you have it. Me breaking my arm to pat myself on the back.